Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're speaking with Dr. Michael Lenz. Dr. Lenz is a practicing physician in Delafield, Waukesha County, Wisconsin. He is board certified in pediatrics and internal medicine, which means he sees patients from newborns through adulthood. He's also a diplomat of the Board of Lifestyle Medicine and a diplomat of the Board of Clinical Lipidology. Dr. Lenz also has received a T. Colin Campbell Plant-Based Nutrition Certificate. That's a mouthful. You'll have to explain that in the future here. Dr. Lenz graduated from the Medical College of Wisconsin in Milwaukee and completed his residency at the Virginia Commonwealth University Hospitals in Richmond, Virginia. Dr. Lenz has helped hundreds of patients suffering from fibromyalgia-like pain. He is committed to educating, inspiring, and equipping patients to walk through this battle triumphantly. That's a nice sentence. I like that. That's a good one. This is all from his bio. His interest in fibromyalgia started with mental health. Caring for both has helped him better understand complex problems, including fibromyalgia and other chronic pain conditions like migraines, chronic abdominal pain, dysmenorrhea, irritable bowel, and POTS. I look at my daughter over there who has POTS. His goal is to inform and inspire and equip those with fibromyalgia, their loved ones, and physicians who have had little training and experience caring for those with complex conditions. All involved are typically frustrated, in despair, and disillusioned by the healthcare system and vulnerable to alternative care that is not evidence-based and typically not covered by insurance. Despite this, it is one of the most rewarding groups of patients that he works with. He's author of the book and host of the podcast, Conquering Your Fibromyalgia. And we'll put a link for that on our website. He's joining us today to talk about the role that nutrition and exercise have for those living with fibromyalgia. Welcome to the show, Dr. Lenz. And for the purpose of this interview, would you like to be called Dr. Lenz or Michael?
You can call me Michael. That's what my family calls me. I'm very informal.
All right. Great. We're all family now. Thank you for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure to have. It's an honor to be on here and enjoy looking forward to the conversation we get to have this morning.
Okay. As are we.
Michael, good morning. This is Ron. I would like to start off this interview by asking what actually led you to your career in medicine?
I always have been just very curious. I loved learning, loved science, wanted to help people, and this is the best way for me that I thought to bridge that interest and also enjoy help coaching with people. I've been involved in sports much of my life and as both an athlete and then got a chance to coach some of my kids' sports growing up. So kind of a blend of both of those. So it's a great blessing to be able to get a chance to impact people's lives personally.
It's a pretty big career choice to make. I'm glad that you made it. Michael, what is fibromyalgia and how is it diagnosed?
So fibromyalgia is a syndrome and it is a problem in how the brain processes stimuli. At the core, the three core symptoms are diffuse chronic pain, so pain in multiple areas of the body. There is also fatigue that's much more than the average fatigue you might get from just needing a short little nap. And there also is brain fog. And under the umbrella of all of these, there are other regional pain syndromes for most people. The diagnosis is made by a careful history and physical exam, and there are standardized questionnaires or such as the widespread pain index, where you're asking which areas in the body you have pain. and also the symptom severity score, and then also a history and some typically routine blood work that can be that are common blood work like thyroid and sed rates, an examination looking for other causes. Obviously, if somebody has cancer and they've lost 40 pounds unintentionally and they have a cough and they're coughing up blood and they can't breathe, we wouldn't jump to the conclusion that's fibromyalgia. We'd probably be thinking somebody has lung cancer. There are also can be other diagnoses that go along with this. So sometimes people will have about 40% of people who have rheumatoid arthritis also have fibromyalgia, for example. About 40% of people who have Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis also have irritable bowel syndrome. So this is often a highly comorbid condition.
Okay.
There are many other problems that go along with it, but that's kind of a quick overview.
And is that why it's so difficult to diagnose? Because there are so many comorbid
conditions
that go along with it?
So I would not say it's difficult to diagnose for me, because I'm aware of this. It starts with that awareness and that importance. I think it's something that is delayed in medical education. I finished my residency in the year 2000. I never had a grand rounds discussion on fibromyalgia. It's not in my board certification exam there that I just took a couple years ago. There was maybe one question about it, and it was just a simple medication question. So it's not a high priority, both for medical schools for learning. And it also is not a high priority for the residency and certification programs. But I think it's gradually getting more awareness. But I think because it's a complex problem, there isn't one specialty that has taken ownership of this. I had a recent podcast interview with a resident that works with me doing his outpatient rotations, and he gets a chance to rotate through all different parts of the hospital along with coming to the clinic with me. And he said that, you know, if he's doing a infectious disease rotation, the infectious disease specialist may have a certain segment of fibromyalgia, which is long haul COVID, which we're understanding overlaps with fibromyalgia. There's chronic Lyme or post Lyme treatment disorder. In the GI world, there might be the irritable bowel. In the neurology world, there might be migraines. In the psychiatry world, there might be ADHD. All of these are in silos. And unfortunately, in the world of medicine, complex problems end up in specialists, but the specialists aren't trained to deal with all of these inter-organ system problems really well. So what ends up happening is many of these patients end up in no man's land, where then they don't get the comprehensive care that's needed. And that's kind of one of the goals I decided a few years ago. I should probably write a book to try to bring this together, because there isn't, at the time I thought, the most up-to-date comprehensive book. And then I thought, well, I'll start a podcast to help supplement that, to help so that it isn't, to help take away the what appears to be complex and confusing and frustrating, and help make it more understandable and more hopeful.
Sure. Is your podcast
help people get better?
Yeah. Is your podcast geared towards other physicians, or is it towards patients?
Exactly. Yes.
I had a feeling that you were going to say that.
So my primary point of the podcast that I started, and actually for the book, was my own patients, because when you have complex problems, I don't have to convince for a simple problem, for example, that if somebody has a urinary tract infection, to explain the complexities of how these antibiotics work. People know they have symptoms of urinary tract infection. They take it, they get better. They don't need a podcast to discuss urinary tract infections typically. Okay. So my goal with the podcast and the book were my own patients. And also it's for all the other patients out there, I realize, who don't have me as their doctor. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also meant for their loved ones. For loved ones, family members, spouses that do not have this, they don't understand from an experience standpoint of never having lived with this. And it's also meant for doctors and or other medical providers who just never had that training, but want to learn more and really want to help these patients.
Okay. All right. Wonderful.
So it's a pretty smart podcast, I think, in the sense where I get in some medical jargon and stuff, because I want to not be so superficial that a doctor can't get anything out of it, but I also want to kind of challenge the layperson that there is to recognize, hey, they can be pretty smart and they can get some good understanding of what's going on.
All right. Thank you.
And Michael, do you think that there has been an increase in the number of cases of fibromyalgia, or is it just that fibromyalgia, the term itself, is more in the zeitgeist nowadays and, you know, we hear about it more often?
Great question. I think that it's always been there. When you look at, I just did a podcast series on the author of Gone with the Wind, Margaret Mitchell, was born in 1900. And a retrospective look at her life has shown that she had both fibromyalgia and she had ADHD.
Okay.
And that it's always been there.
Right.
Yeah, we just didn't recognize it. You know, it's mm-hmm. the saying, if a tree mm-hmm. falls in a forest, does it make a noise? Of course right. it makes a noise. It's always been there. Mm-hmm. I just had a patient of mine that I just saw, and she listened to my podcast, and she said, you know, she's 48 years old now, and she said, you know, I was told I had arthritis when I was in high school.
Oh, okay.
And her mom had arthritis in her diagnosed in her 40s. And then she listened, and she said, that's not arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
I have fibromyalgia. This whole time I've been told I just had arthritis. I said, you don't get arthritis at age 17, not wear and tear arthritis. You
right.
get osteoarthritis. But
right.
so I think a lot of times these have been told other diagnoses. They've been given other explanations that aren't very satisfying. And don't many people are just told you're depressed, you're just anxious, you're overstressed without a unifying diagnosis. So I think it's somewhat like autism. It's always been there. And now we are reclassifying this into a more specific
right.
under the diagnosis to make more help in understanding.
Okay.
Right,
yeah,
right.
That
it
makes
totally
sense.
Makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And Michael, what would you say is the biggest misconception about fibromyalgia?
That this isn't real,
okay.
that it's all made up, that it's imaginary, and it's just all in their head and they're just faking it, that they're just hypochondriacs.
Yeah, that's disturbing.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, that's very sad.
Yeah, that is. Michael, what about nutrition? How can somebody's nutrition affect the symptoms of fibromyalgia?
So food has a powerful impact, as we're learning more and more. Part of my training in lifestyle medicine and the nutrition, looking at the role of food and the microbiome, and what we're understanding is that it does have a major impact. There's a couple smaller studies, and more studies can be done, but showed that eating a whole food, healthy, vegan-type diet had cut symptoms of fibromyalgia in half. Unfortunately, many people who are struggling in pain, they actually are diagnosed with fibromyalgia, actually eat half as many fruit and vegetables as the average poor eating American diet, where the average person eats about 5 or 7 servings of fruit and vegetables in a week. The average person with fibromyalgia eats about 3 to 4. Now, this is average, hopefully, of education. And part of that is sort of giving you short-term relief with feeling less anxious and that calorie-dense food without any of the nutrient density that is so good for your health makes you feel good in the short term, but long-term causes problems. So it has so many impacts. One example, and under the umbrella of fibromyalgia, is irritable bowel syndrome. That's a regional pain syndrome, similar to migraines that you mentioned earlier in my introduction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a little bit graphic, but what we found is that when you eat food that's high in fiber, that's plant food, that's digested by healthy gut bacteria, and those gut bacteria release some really powerful compounds. One of the compound groups are called short-chain fatty acids, and also, there's a production of these precursors to neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine. So one of these short-chain fatty acids called propionic acid has been shown to act as regional analgesia, kind of like a lidocaine in the gut. So an example is that people who have IBS are much more sensitive to distension of the colon, for example. So they've done a study. There's a little graphic here where you put a balloon in the colon with a pressure sensor on it. And they'll inflate that pressure and say, tell us when you're moderately uncomfortable and we'll stop. People who don't have IBS can tolerate about twice as much distension as those who do have IBS. But if you then put an enema of this propionic acid in, and then you do the test, Well, now they normalize or much get closer to normal pressure tolerances. Hmm. Well, when you eat a diet over time that's consistently high in these compounds, that their irritable bowel syndrome gets better. They can tolerate things better. There also has an impact on weight loss long term. It helps people just feel better because you have more of that natural serotonin and dopamine. So they're often mood improves over time. And also just general energy improves, and other comorbidities like high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, cholesterol, all that affect in many positive ways that improve functioning overall.
Okay,
sure.
So that's hopefully a quick overview.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that answered my next
question. Did 3 or 4 episodes just on food on my podcast, doing a deeper dive into that, but that's a kind of a quick overview.
Okay.
Great. Thanks. Yeah, that takes care of Jean's question. Mm-hmm. So are there any particular vitamins or minerals that may benefit someone living with fibromyalgia as far as a supplement?
So the only supplements that I even recommend in general is if you are adopting a whole food plant-based diet, you will eventually run out of B12. So taking a B12 supplement, and then possibly vitamin D. But to say that's going to help specifically fibro, there's just a lot of correlation, but not necessarily causation when it comes to vitamin D. So living in the upper Midwest here, mm-hmm. not getting a lot of sun now for the next 6 months, vitamin D can't hurt. Am I going to say that's going to help your fibromyalgia? Hard to say. Maybe anecdotally, some people may report that other vitamins. Actually, I really try to focus on the most important vitamins are the phytonutrients, all of the unnamed nutrients that are in the, mm-hmm. the purple carrots and mm-hmm. the sweet potatoes and the cauliflower and broccoli and the legumes, beans, peas, and lentils and the whole grains, all of them that are just naturally in the healthy foods. Mm-hmm. That is the most powerful thing that you can put in your mouth that we often don't think of too much. And I think sometimes we think of vitamins as a quick way to make up for a bad diet.
No, and unfortunately, absolutely. I'm sure that that's what the majority of Americans are doing. That's obvious because we're all eating the wrong thing and going to supplements instead. Why would vitamin B12 supplement be needed? Why can't you get that out of your regular foods if you're eating a plant-based full?
Oh, so if you're great question. So all of B12 comes from bacteria that are in the soil. And the reason we don't get it is because we clean all of our food. Okay. We don't eat the dirt that has the bacteria. When animals like cows eat the grass, they eat the dirt with it. And then that gets concentrated in them. But any animal doesn't naturally make B12. We used to think, for example, that an appendix was an unnecessary organ. I don't know if you've ever heard that before,
but it's actually
an important organ. And one of the things it does is it does have a lot of bacteria in there that may be involved with helping B12 production to some degree. But we usually just have to take it because we don't have it in our food because we just how we processed food.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for answering that.
And Michael, do individuals living with fibromyalgia need to avoid that wonderful like umami taste that one would find with monosodium glutamate, or can you can find that in tomatoes and cheese and all those tasty foods? Is that something that will exacerbate symptoms for someone living with fibromyalgia, or can we continue to
partake? So one of the great substitutions for food that you can get the umami taste are actually mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great substitute. So for people who want to get that kind of meaty flavor,
mm-hmm.
having mushrooms introduced into that can give that substitute for that. Some people will actually quote have mushroom burgers, actually eating the mushrooms in that. So if you like that umami taste, and the monosodium glutamate, usually that's going to be a little more processed food. We don't recommend that in general, trying to have less processed sources of that. And to some people may be more sensitive to the monosodium glutamate than others, just in general, and fibromyalgia, not everybody responds exactly the same to the same.
Sure.
Many people with IBS will be very sensitive to dairy. And they're much more likely to get constipated, bloating, gas pain, especially. And I'm in Wisconsin here, where it's the dairy state, but unfortunately, it's not great for abdominal pain and chronic fibromyalgia type pain.
Okay.
So how can routine exercise help someone with fibromyalgia cope with the pain and other symptoms associated with the condition?
So exercise is really important. In fact, one of the interesting things that findings or observations in people who have fibromyalgia is that almost everybody, when they were at an earlier age, if it goes back to childhood, used to be the really, really active kid. Whether they were in dance, where they were taking care of horses, where they're just riding their bike all the time and just playing outside, or they were in a formal sport or swim team or whatever. So with fibromyalgia at the core, the central nervous system is kind of like having an amplifier that the volume control is affected. Things can turn it up or down, and the pain can be turned up and down. And they use the term ascending pain pathways and descending pain pathways. Ascending pain pathways are pathways that amplify your pain, right? And there are descending pain pathways that work as a brake to turn down that intensity. And exercise is one of those. So people who have fibromyalgia compared to people who are not prone to fibromyalgia, they need to be active on a regular basis to feel normal. Now, I'm going to use this and not in a derogatory way here, but it's kind of like a dog. There are some dogs there are breeds that you got to walk them 7 to 9 miles a day. Otherwise, I don't know, they eat shoes or whatever. They go around the house and they get all.
You should just see the looks on and their then there faces are dogs. When you said that. I don't mean to interrupt, yeah. But I saw Lita in Gene.
I mean, I'm lucky if my dogs want to go for a walk a half a block, 5 to 7 miles
a day.
Well,
and then there are dogs that, and then there's a dog. We have, I don't know, it seems like half the houses have dogs in our neighborhood. And then I look and there's the dog who just sits in the front yard and watches people. And I think if he had to walk around the block, he'd be complaining. Like, really? Why do I need to walk?
Yes,
why can't I just look at people?
Right.
I just like looking at people. And that's kind of like the person who does. But there are people who just they need that to feel normal.
Okay.
And when they go on a vacation for a couple of days and they get on a plane and they don't exercise, they didn't do anything that actually to injure their body. They actually feel worse. Now, if you're in a high level of fibromyalgia and you're really struggling now, and your fibromyalgia impact score, measure of how bad your fibromyalgia from 0 to 100, and it's in the very high level, to tell somebody if they're getting 500 steps a day and they need 10, 15, 20,000 steps a day, if you start walking 10 to 20,000 steps in one day, it's going to feel like they just walked a marathon and they're extremely uncomfortable, exhausted, and in terrible pain. So what I'll have my patients do with some kind of activity monitor, if they're usually people when by the time I'm seeing them, they have pretty significant levels of fibromyalgia, is for a week, just track where your steps are. And one of the interesting observations is that almost universally, people with fibromyalgia, when you look at just steps, they will have a roller coaster of activity. What that means is they might on Saturday get 10,000 steps, maybe another 8,000 on Sunday, and then they're exhausted. So then Monday and Tuesday, they get maybe 1,000 steps because they're overdid it. And then they do a little more and get maybe 3,000 or 4,000. And then they go up to 10 and then they overdid it and then they rest. Just by pace. So then I'll say, okay, you're averaging 5,000 steps a day, but it's way all over.
Right.
I want you to get 5,000 steps every day. And then I want to have you pace yourself ideally so that those 5,000 steps are spread out as best you can throughout the day. And if you can do that, that might lower your overall pain by 20%. And in the world of fibromyalgia, all of the interventions, it's kind of like the game of baseball. Most of the interventions are singles or doubles. You get a partial improvement, or kind of using a football analogy, to have 11 players doing everything right, you need to get just a 5-yard gain. And then you have to do another play. Like every day, everything has to be coordinated from exercise, sleep, diet, appropriate medications. All of those have to be working together in unison to get the results. So
sure,
exercise is important and is a great tool.
Okay. But with some type of a restriction as far as don't overdo it.
Well, and for everybody's overdo it, it'll depend on what their level is. So I have to get their baseline, you know, if their baseline. And then many people I'll find in where I live in the country in Wisconsin, they do much better in the summer. The temperature's warmer. Mm-hmm. They work in their yard. They go for walks. And then the days get shorter and they're more sensitive to the cold. And they don't realize that they might have been getting 15, 20,000 steps in the summer and they were doing pretty well. And then the weather gets cold and they only get 4,000 steps and they were unaware that you need to now to compensate by walk indoors on a treadmill, which might be boring for them compared to working in their yard, working in their garden, which is much more enjoyable. But hey, unless you move to a different state, you have to then pretend you're walking outside in the warm weather.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
And Michael, what can you tell us about fibromyalgia and its possible connection with depression?
Great question. So the connection between fibromyalgia and depression. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of people who have finally get diagnosed with fibromyalgia have been told for years they're just depressed. And actually, for many people, that's quite offensive because they've often been tried on many different antidepressants. And they go, you know, doc, I'm not really depressed. I'm just really frustrated because I'm in pain. Mm-hmm. I have brain fog and fatigue. And to dismiss me as just being depressed is just to say, okay, well, get out of my office. You're depressed. Here, take this medication. Now, there's higher comorbidities of other mental health issues that go along with this. About half of people who have fibromyalgia have ADHD. And what we found, and that's something that many people aren't aware of, but the connection between the two, and we know that treating ADHD can help significantly reduce fibromyalgia symptoms and the brain fog and fatigue. It can help with navigating complex lifestyle from shopping, meal planning, consistency. So that plays a role. And some have depression as well. One of the challenges when you're having overlapping problems is which one is the biggest problem. For many people, they may have some level of depression by the PHQ-9, but when we treat the other comorbidities that are going along with it, the depression symptoms improve. So it's kind of nuanced and everybody's an individual and sometimes they have it going along, but to again reiterate that sometimes that's offending this, and often many people with fibro who've been through this for years are discouraged when a doctor says, oh, you're just depressed. And it's different than depression.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Michael, how can nutrition and exercise combined help someone with fibromyalgia?
Yeah, they go hand in hand. You know, if you're eating well, you feel better. You have more energy. If you have more energy, you're more likely to do activity. Both of them, like we said earlier, can affect the pain amplification system so that it can act to help decrease pain sensitivity. So your nervous system isn't as sensitive. And actually exercises for many people helps treat if somebody's got comorbid ADHD, it helps treat that as well. So they're an important, very important.
Okay.
That makes sense. They go hand in hand.
Right.
So, Michael, what do you recommend patients that have fibromyalgia, what do you recommend they take with them on their trips? And also, as a doctor, what do you take with you when you go on a trip? What do you take for emergencies?
Okay. So, I guess it depends on just in general for fibromyalgia, for travel in general.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, let's say it's relatively short travel. So we're, you know, in November in a little over a month, there are people who will go to Thanksgiving and they might drive a couple hours to family. So we're not talking maybe as far of a trip. Maybe it's locally. And maybe the traditional Thanksgiving is going there, talking, sitting around all day, maybe helping with some dishes or whatever, but sitting all day. Well, if you have fibromyalgia, it's terrible to sit all day.
Okay.
And so if you go, well, if you know you're prone to this, say, hey, before I leave, I'm going to go for a half hour walk. So before we get in the car for a 2-hour trip, let's go for a half hour walk. And while we're there, we're socializing, maybe have a lunch or whatever. And then you say, hey, I'm going for a walk. Who wants to go for a walk with me? And instead of sitting around watching football of meaningless games, go for a walk, recognizing that that's that. And likely there are a lot of people who are wanting to be healthy and say, I'll go for a walk with you, right? Recognizing that, just like the diet we talked about, is, hey, make sure we have some plant healthy options as part of the Thanksgiving option. And most people, if they care about you, go, hey, this has been a big part of helping me stay healthy. And here are some healthy, nice Thanksgiving type recipes that are also plant-based. And I'm going to make that, and or other people making it to help support you from that standpoint. So including that, if you're going on longer trips, you recognize, like, yeah, it might be a great deal to have that 5 a.m. flight, but boy, that could mean you're getting up at 2 a.m. to get to the airport and your sleep schedule's completely off. Mm-hmm. And then that could just completely spoil your trip. To recognize, no, I need my consistent sleep schedule. Maybe you get to the airport early. So you'll say, hey, I'm going to walk through the airport for an hour and get my steps in, because exercise is important. I make sure, again, bringing some healthy food, and then make sure you're continuing to take, if you have medications that you need to continue to take them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If that helps.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Michael, do you have any suggestions for how someone living with fibromyalgia can exercise, and, you know, if they're having chronic pain, are there modifications, or what do you recommend for someone who's living with chronic pain and still wants to exercise?
Yeah, it depends on what level they're at. You know, I not knowing where somebody's at, you know, they're all different levels. Somebody might be extremely limited because of mechanical problems. They might have severe osteoarthritis that has preventing them to walk, or have significant obesity that is playing a big role in their impact of how much they can actually do. So if somebody has just hard time walking, if they could get into the water, for example, and gradually improve or gradually increase their activity, whether it's from sitting to just gradually increasing. I have a patient of mine who I did a story on my podcast. Her name's Teresa. And she came in and she was maybe walking 500 steps, walked in with a cane. Mm-hmm. And now she's walking many miles a day, doing great. But she started slow, had that step counter, and just recognized those little baby steps. You know, part of fibromyalgia is start low and go slow.
Okay.
So recognizing where is somebody at, there is not one size fits all on what to do.
Okay. Oh, okay. Sure. All right. Sure. Well, that's good to know. I mean, a lot of doctors.
And then there's also if somebody has lower impact activities, so somebody, like I say, swimming, stationary bike, an elliptical. Sure. And then if you can gradually build up to some level of sometimes like yoga, stretching, and gradually increase the minutes, you may just have stretching and standing for 5 minutes with some simple yoga and doing from 500 steps. And probably every week, kind of a rule of thumb is try to increase your activity about 10% per week. So if you're getting 500 steps next week, get 550. And as that time goes on, you could see how that after 6 months, if you're able to really watch that, and that's part of that coaching and really having that step counter, tracking that, keeping a close eye on that
would be
important.
All right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And Michael, we had already asked you, what inspired you to become a doctor. I'm wondering what has surprised you the most about being a doctor?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know if anything surprised me.
Okay.
I had a mentor who said a question that was surprising. Maybe this is what the most surprising thing he said. He was a pre-med advisor and in med school, he said, you're going to learn a lot from your patients, which I thought was really silly. Because on a very concrete thinking, it's like, so you're just going to walk in and the patient's going to just be a professor in diabetes, and you're just going to by chance just get all of these great workshops by them teaching you? And of course, what it was is I heard all of the stories. And so in the world of fibromyalgia, hearing people's stories, and in the beginning, not completely understanding the answer or the solutions. And then the other, one of the other concepts he said was that every 7 years, half of what you learn in medicine changes. And then throwing another one is it takes about 17 years for something that's commonly accepted to be implemented regularly in practice. I will put a caveat. If it is a procedure where you can make a lot of money, that gets it gets to mainstream pretty quickly. But if for something in the world of fibromyalgia and all the concepts we're talking about here, there's no big financial incentive, you know, from combining all of these. It's actually quite time consuming. So just recognizing how all of those have come true, that wow, I can learn so much from my patients. And I've, when I share stories in my podcast and my book, those are from patient stories. And so hopefully those stories are to recognize that people who are going through this are not unique, that they're what they're going through is real. I've had more than one patient say, you know, I cried the first four chapters in the book because that's my story. And they recognize there's a doctor who recognizes what their symptoms have are real. You know, that subtitle of the book is Real Answers and Real Solutions for Real Pain, and often they've been dismissed. So
excellent.
Well, listening is key. I mean, going back to what you said about people that have fibromyalgia but they were diagnosed with depression or what have you, you know, when a doctor or somebody wants to label it to have something to put it in a box, oh, it's this, oh, it's that, they're not listening to the patient and what's going on. And that it's got to be so much more frustrating for the patient. So I completely agree with what you're saying about listening to your patients, listening to their stories, listening to their symptoms, and really trying to understand who they are as an individual, because theirs is going to be different than the next patient, and so on and so forth.
However, we've talked about this many times, that nowadays when you go to the doctor, you get like 3 minutes with the doctor. You don't really have the time to...
well, that's a whole different topic.
I'm just saying. Just saying that that's probably part of the problem.
So, Michael, how about your friends and family? Becoming a doctor obviously takes a long time. How have they helped you as you were going through med school and now?
It was something they always were supportive of and encouraging, you know, encouraging education and learning and continuing to be an active learner. It's been just part of who I am, and I think been very supportive of it. I do enjoy what I get to do as a doctor. Most of what I do now is outpatient. Now with hospitalists, the schedule, the schedule, is much more tolerable, you know, with getting, not having to get called in the middle of the night for ICU patients like I did when I first started. But that's just better work-life balance.
Okay.
And then just supporting, you know, I love being active. I love eating healthy. I love being active. So that's just a important part of just your own self-care as a doctor. You know, there's a lot of talk about the medical world within a burnout within and caregiver fatigue, that it's important to have that support. That also having my faith is a strong support in getting, putting perspective to life and recognizing the limitations of medicine as well, that not everybody is going to be cured. Not everybody gets better. You know, whether it's cancer or other diagnoses, you try to do your best
Okay.
That's great. Thank you.
Yes.
And I think that answered your next question.
Right, it did. I was going to ask, what advice do you have for the medical students, but that took care of that one.
But, Michael, how can we learn more about your podcast and your book?
So, the podcast, you can get it on the typical podcast locations, whether it's on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Play, among others. So that's called Just Conquering Your Fibromyalgia. And then the book is available through Amazon and other places that your local bookstore you can order it through, called Conquering Your Fibromyalgia, Real Answers and Real Solutions for Real Pain. And I do some blogging on my website, conqueringyourfibromyalgia.com. And I'm trying to do a little more social media as well. I've been doing my podcast for over a year now. And most recent episodes talking about chronic Lyme. And we talked about migraine headaches recently and dealing with faith and fibro and chronic pain. So always trying to get new topics and interviews, stories. So,
Well, great.
Yeah, that sounds great. And we'll have links for your podcast and your blog and your
website.
Book as well. Yep, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes.
Well, it's a pleasure to have and that you invited me, and it's been a joy and glad to share more of the information to, like you said, trying to help inform, inspire, and equip everybody to take care of those who have fibromyalgia. You know, for too long, people with fibromyalgia have been dismissed, and it's about time that the medical community steps up.
Sure.
You know, it used to be depression was ignored as just somebody's mental fragility, and they just needed to smile and be happier. And now we recognize it's a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
And now we understand the same is with fibromyalgia. This is a real problem, and it deserves the real care and to give real hope, evidence-based hope, and not just false hopes and people getting preyed on by offering treatments that aren't evidence-based but often costly.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
If you have any questions or comments related to today's show, you can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram by the same name.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment before undertaking the healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.